Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.wordpress.com.
I'll be back.
She'll be back.
I'm back.
Welcome back to part two of this double episode of Luke's English Podcast. This one's all about movies. In part one, you heard Henry Dean and myself discussing films and starting to deal with some questions which you had sent in to us on Facebook. Well, in part two, we continue to deal with those questions, so listen tight. Make yourself a cup of tea or coffee if that's what you prefer. I hope you enjoy the show. Thanks for listening. Next one is from Christelle, and she says, why do most men love action movies with guns, explosions, blood and sexy girls, but no real storyline?
That's because they are the best things. No. I don't know, to tell you the truth, because I'm sure if you did psychological tests, there are just as many women that love guns and blood and explosions.
Yeah, really?
Well, maybe not, actually. I think that might be a bit of an overstatement.
See, in my experience, what often happens is when a couple say, yeah, let's watch a movie tonight, the guy is thinking, yeah, I want to watch, you know, the exploding building 3. Yeah. And the girl wants to see the, you know, House of Romance 3.
Yeah.
You know, the girls usually want a love story, and the guys usually want something that involves a bit of action. Yeah. And often the best or the films that are most popular combine those things. You always get...
That's the thing. You can always find a film that compromises for two people. So if you are ever struggling to find something, just keep looking for a bit longer and you'll find something. But I think men just like it because of the nature that men are brought up in, in the world.
Yeah.
They're very exposed to high testosterone, loud, fast things.
I think it's a very good question because really this is a question about why are men and women different?
Exactly.
Christelle maybe has a point here that men seem to be preoccupied with violence, which is, I think, true.
And it is true.
You could say that's a worrying phenomenon. Maybe men shouldn't be preoccupied with violence. Maybe it goes back to something like the traditional role that men had.
Hunting.
As the hunter-gatherer, yeah. Who would go out and either defend the family against attackers or would defend them against sort of predators or would go out and hunt animals. So sort of somehow built into our genetics is this sort of violent instinct. And now we kind of deal with that by enjoying a bit of violence in our movies. Why? I don't know. But she does say there are some exceptions, of course. Why do most men love action movies with guns, explosions, blood and sexy girls, but no real storyline? Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's the bit I don't really agree with, because even if you take say, for instance, the new Fast and the Furious film that came out, Fast and the Furious 6. I'm sure if you spoke to whoever it was that directed that, or whoever it was that wrote that, there is a very real storyline, very real subplots and meanings to everything. So I think people are often way too quick to judge a film for its face value, for its entertainment value, because any film has a storyline. Otherwise, it would just be a blank screen.
Exactly.
For an hour
nothing,
and a half.
Nothing would happen if it had no storyline. So I have to disagree with you there, Christelle. Mm. I think you'll find that even the most sort of apparently boring action film does have an actual storyline. It might not be an appealing storyline. No. You could also say that these sort of rom-coms have no storyline
exactly.
As well. It's always like boy meets girl sort of doesn't really like boy.
Girl is forced to spend time with boy. Girl and boy join into some sort of a difficult situation. Boy and girl resolve difficult situation. Girl realizes that she likes boy. Girl and boy kiss each other. The movie ends.
Exactly. And I think you'll actually find a lot of films within the same genres have exactly the same storyline. For instance, someone recently studied Pixar's films, the animated films of Pixar, and essentially they have one story that they do over and over again, and there's 38 variables within the story, but the actual storyline is exactly the same in all like 14 or 15 of, or however many years of Pixar's
so
features.
Pixar did things like Toy Story, Wall-E,
what else did they do? My mind's gone completely. They've done Cars.
Yeah.
A Bug's Life. Was that? I think that might be Pixar or maybe DreamWorks.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's it doesn't just apply to Pixar. In fact, someone said once that there are only about four or five stories. And
well, that's true.
Anything, any book or any narrative is basically a version of one of those things. That is another episode of the podcast, Stories.
Yes, Stories.
We could do that. So, Christelle, you know, I hope you're satisfied with that answer. Probably not.
Probably not.
She probably, she probably wants more information about why men are interested in guns. And we'll have to deal with that at a later date. Amir Zadeh says, do you know how much money animation software costs, for example, the software for the Iron Man movie? I don't know if he is planning on making his own science fiction film, but do you know how much the animation software costs?
Well, nowadays the sort of the professional movie studios and the people at home will use very similar, if not the same, software. I'm sure something as big as Iron Man had some special software on there, but if you have a Mac, you can actually buy software called Motion, which you can find on the App Store on your Mac. And I don't know how much it is exactly. I think it's around £140. But that will be able to do, as an amateur, anything you want it to. And a lot of feature films will use this kind of software as well. They'll just have a lot more powerful computers and very skilled animators and engineers who will make the animations happen. Obviously with Iron Man, something of that scale where probably 90% of the film isn't real, it's computer generated, they probably do have very special computers and software they'd use for that. But just sort of a regular animation, say, for instance, if you wanted to make an episode of The Simpsons, I know it's not a film, but there is The Simpsons movie. If you wanted to make an episode of The Simpsons or something of the like, or even more complicated 3D animation, you could do it on your laptop. As long as you have a decent, fairly powerful laptop, you can do it yourself. But
Would you recommend doing that on a Windows laptop, Henry?
It depends. If it's a very good Windows laptop, then yes. But the chances are that you probably won't own one. I mean, you could, but it would be if you're just starting out, it would be a lot easier to learn on a Mac.
Yeah,
a lot cheaper as well.
All right. Okay, so there you go. Next question comes from Hamid, who says English spoken in some Hollywood movies is very easy to understand, while in others it's so difficult. Why? Right now, I can't think of any movies, so you can't actually think of any examples. But good question, Hamid. I'm sure that many listeners will have experienced the same things. Sometimes you watch a movie and you think, "Yeah, I understand everything they're saying," and then other times you watch other Hollywood movies and you think, "Wait a minute, I've got no idea what anyone's talking about." Well, first of all, I would say that sometimes I watch Hollywood movies and I don't know what they're talking about either. For example, let's see, I watched Apollo 13 not long ago.
Yes.
And there were lots and lots of scenes in that film where, for example, they're experiencing problems in the spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all using this technical language. And it didn't make any sense to me. So, like, you know, excuse me, we're experiencing a slight TK421 issue on the landsliding doors of the perpendicular hold. Can you get a reading on that? You know, that kind of thing. And you think, well, actually, you're not really supposed to understand every word of that. So, in some films, it's a question of the style of the movie. So, if the style is meant to be very realistic, as if you're just sort of observing people in their daily lives, you might not be able to understand what they're saying. Like a lot of films in the 1970s, like, like very realistic films in the 70s.
Taxi Driver,
for example, where maybe the scenes are recorded in an improvised way, and the characters don't speak very clearly. That's a stylistic decision by the director, and in that case it might be very hard for you to understand. Other films will be written with a very clear script and recorded very clearly so that they'll just be easier to understand. So
if you want to try and find some films that that are clearer and easier to understand, look for older films from sort of maybe 1960 and before, because of one, the poor quality of the sound equipment, and two, just people's experience of watching films. The actors spoke very clearly and very loud as well. So you can often understand what they're saying a lot more easily.
The only thing about that is that there's a chance that the style of English that they're using will be
maybe
a bit old-fashioned.
Outdated. That's true. But most of it, I think, you should be fine with.
I do love watching some of those old American movies from the 40s or 50s.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like those sort of gangster movies. Now look here, see?
They're great. They're really good.
Now look here. I'm the guy with the money. I can't really do it very well. But
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. What was I going to say? I was going to say something else then. And I can't remember what it was. Well, there you go. So, really, I can't really tell you which films exactly will be easy to understand and which ones won't. It all depends on the style of that particular film. One film that I have, I have some experience of trying to find films which will be easy for learners of English to understand, and I've never really managed to find one film which was like universally understandable. They've all got rather difficult language in them, rather advanced language. One film I did find was what's it called? Nacho Libre, which is a Jack Black comedy about a lucha libre wrestler from Mexico. And the reason that that's easy to understand is because he speaks a kind of pidgin English in the film. So in fact, it's not really natural English. It's the sort of English of a Mexican monk.
He's trying to speak English.
Now, he does speak pretty much correct English, but with quite a heavy Mexican-Spanish accent. But it's very easy to follow. So if I was showing a movie to a group of people who had low level of English, I would probably show them that one, just because they would be able to understand it and as a result enjoy it, I hope. But it's really up to you, Hamid, to choose your films. But don't feel too bad if you don't understand everything in all the films that you watch. It could be a stylistic decision by the director to make the characters rather difficult to understand. For example, a film like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is all about guys mumbling to themselves or mumbling to each other, and not being able to hear clearly what they're saying to create an atmosphere of realism or mystery around it. Right, Rajesh has written, Master Luke, which is how I expect everyone to address me. Hi to the guest of our pod. Hi, Henry.
Hello.
Everyone likes comedy films, so what are the all-time best comedy films? And who is your favourite comedian, Henry? All-time best comedy films?
This is a big question, and it's a question I love, because comedy is my... Being a comedian as well, comedy is my favourite genre. As I mentioned before, I love the films that are written, directed, produced by Mr. Judd Apatow. I really like his style of comedy. Some of those include Anchorman, Talladega Nights, Pineapple Express. Well, he wasn't involved directly. He produced Pineapple Express, still one of his films. Knocked Up, 40-Year-Old Virgin, This Is 40, Superbad, all those kind of comedy films that have really become very popular over the past sort of 10 years or so. I also love the work of Will Ferrell and Adam McKay, who work with Judd Apatow occasionally, with films like Anchorman, Step Brothers, older films like Night at the Roxbury. That's a very good one. Superstar. They're very good early Will Ferrell films.
What do you think of... you mentioned Will Ferrell. He's kind of like one of the big stars of American comedy these days. What about Jim Carrey? What do you think of him?
I love Jim Carrey. I think he gets a very bad time. He was an amazing stand-up comedian, and he transitioned very well to film. There are some films that maybe he should have thought twice about doing, but I think in terms of comedy actors transitioning to dramatic actors, he's done very well.
To be honest, one of my kind of guilty pleasures is Ace Ventura Pet Detective.
Yeah.
In fact, I really love Ace Ventura Pet Detective 2.
Well, I haven't even seen that.
When Nature Calls. And the only reason I like it, obviously the storyline is completely stupid, the character is ridiculous, the situation that he's in is completely farcical, but I just love Jim Carrey's performance. And really, the whole... I don't care what he's doing, as long as he's being his kind of crazy, sort of dynamic and ultra-cool, ultra-goofy self. I just love Ace Ventura as a character.
He's a very wild character. And yeah, you can see it suits Jim Carrey very well.
I think Jim Carrey really made the film. If anyone else had performed Ace Ventura, it would have been awful. It would have been sort of straight to video crap. But Jim Carrey's performance in that, it's just almost every scene in that film is hilarious. Again, it's a matter of opinion. You might have seen that, and you listening to this, you might think Ace Ventura, that was just the worst film I've ever seen in my whole life. I can't believe that Luke actually rates that. And you're well within your rights to believe that, as we've already established. But personally, I love his physical comedy. I think it's great.
Yeah.
It's not very intellectual stuff.
No.
But sometimes it's fun to just watch a guy jumping around.
Always is fun.
And ultimately, movies are about the moving image. And watching Jim Carrey's physical comedy is just one of the reasons why we have films. So the all-time greatest comedies, it's a very difficult question.
Yeah, that's there are also older ones. In all honesty, I can't answer that question.
Yeah.
Because there are so many comedies through the ages. I mean, it started out with sort of Charlie Chaplin, Groucho Marx, and
Marx Brothers,
yeah, people like that, and it's progressed. Woody Allen, amazing comedy writer and film director.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to say. I think everyone likes their own style of comedy as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. Again, I would mention Monty Python.
Yes.
I've mentioned Life of Brian, just because it's always in the top list of comedy movies. And another one is the Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which tells the story of King Arthur searching for the Holy Grail. But really, the storyline's not very important.
No,
it's just full
of... It doesn't matter.
It's full of classic Monty Python comedy sketches. It's a very funny film. And it's the sort of film that lots of people in England know very well, and they can quote lines from it. A film like Spinal Tap, which is... it's going to be difficult. If any of you find Spinal Tap and watch it, I can't guarantee that you're going to find it funny. Sometimes it takes a little while to see the humour in it. It's basically a kind of documentary, a mock documentary or rockumentary, about a group of about a British rock band. They're not real. They're played by actors, but
it's for the film.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not real.
They improvised it for the movie, and they imagined that they were four musicians, and they just, they improvised most of the film. And it's like a fake documentary following this rock band. And it's just full of classic, funny moments. I'd have to go into that one in more detail.
Yes.
I'm actually planning to do some episodes of the podcast which would be called Luke's Classic Movie Moments.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And the idea in that is that I would take a scene from a film and play the scene, the audio on the podcast, and then explain what
that's
all
good.
About
that's
afterwards.
A good idea.
So, what do you think, listeners? Do you want to listen to Luke's classic movie moments? If you would like that, then just let me know. We're now at the 1 hour and 12 minute mark. This is going to become two podcasts.
Oh, well, let's keep going.
Let's keep going. Let's keep pushing forwards. Right. So yes. we're going to move on to. Okay, Fu Hien. I nearly missed you there because I jumped from Hamid to Rajesh, almost missing Fu Hien. And I can't miss her because last time she missed out on asking my dad a question.
Oh.
She said, "Great, I have missed questions when you made a podcast, Wikipedia." That was the episode about my dad.
Okay.
Now I can add a question. What makes a film excellent? What are the crucial elements for making an excellent film?
That is an excellent question, Fu Hien. For me, I would say it's all about the story. If you don't have a good story, you don't have a good film. And a part of that is the characters as well. Characters and story can kind of be clumped together because they all make up the same thing. That's very much a Hollywood mindset of making films. That's what the Hollywood films were initially about, and why they became so successful. So, yeah, in my mind, a good story makes a good film, and that can be any type of story that you can ever think of in the world.
Okay, so a good story, you think?
Yes. Do you agree?
I think it's very difficult to make a really excellent film, and I think a lot of elements need to come together. I totally agree, a good story keeps you gripped. A story with twists and turns or surprises in it is brilliant. I love those stories that pull you in, where you suddenly think, I really don't know what's going to happen next. I love that. But also you need like really well-created characters with depth, where you care about them and you wonder what they're thinking. And so characters with three dimensions to them. Also, the script is really important.
Yeah.
Has to be like snappy script with like funny dialogue and, you know, really good natural use of language. The acting performances for me, like, you know, you could, I mean, as an example, Ace Ventura.
Exactly.
It doesn't have, most of the elements are not there. You know, it's got a bad story. The characters are two-dimensional, but the acting performance is really what makes the film.
And that often comes from having a great director as well, because it's the director's job ultimately to bring the performance out of the actors. So if you have a good director and good actors, that's a perfect film.
Okay. So there you go. There's some of the elements there. I mean, it's more complicated than that.
It's pretty much just a collection of everything. Anything you can possibly think of to do with a film. If it's good, it makes a film excellent.
Must be very difficult to make good films. It's a collaboration, isn't it?
Well, especially when some films, like the Harry Potter films, they'll have a crew of over 1,000 people working on one film just on the set. Then they have hundreds that work on it after and before, so it's crazy. But then there are some independent films that have maybe 10, 15 people working on them.
I can imagine these massive films with thousands of people working on them. I mean, really, like, each person is responsible for the outcome of that film.
Definitely.
So everyone has to work together and do their best job. And also they have to be going in the same direction. So the producer or director of the film has to somehow communicate to everyone on the team exactly what he wants, that he needs to bring them in. So it's an incredibly important job, the director. You've got to inspire everyone to do their best work. The producer is involved in that too, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Kohei has asked, "Hi, I'd like you to ask him about the Cannes Film Festival. Of course, your opinion too. A Japanese movie was awarded this year. So any comments on that, anything? Or tell us what decisive factor of the difference between the Cannes and other movie festivals from your points of view?" Okay, so what do you... So...
let's break this question down.
Let's break it down. All right, so... a Japanese film was awarded at the Cannes Film Festival this year.
Yes.
It was called Like Father, Like Son. The Japanese title was Soshite Chichi ni Naru, which means Like Father, Like Son.
We think.
We assume that's what it means. And it's about a businessman who learns that his biological son was in fact switched with another child after birth. And he must make a life-changing decision and choose his true son or the boy he raised as his own. So it's a sort of psychological thriller.
It's a character film.
Yeah. It's about it's about one of those very difficult... It's like a difficult decision movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
Imagine if you brought up a boy and you loved him and you believed him to be your own son, and then a few years later you realise that, in fact, he's not your son and that he's been switched with another boy. Sounds like a fascinating story.
It does, and I know it won the Jury's Award at Cannes this year and was nominated for the Palme d'Or,
yeah,
which is the big main prize, so it must be excellent. I haven't seen it myself, but if it won the Jury's Award, it means it's a very prestigious film from a critic's point of view. It's a film for film critics, the people who analyse film.
Mm.
So it must be very well made.
Yeah.
And I know the main actor is a very famous Japanese actor who's been in a few successful films in Japan.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Okay. I've lost Facebook on my iPhone.
What do we think about Cannes Film Festival?
Well, let's say very briefly, or in as quick a way as possible, what's the basic difference between Cannes Film Festival and the Academy Awards or the Oscars?
A film festival is an event that takes place over maybe a week or a couple of weeks or an extended period of time, a day at least. Where many, many films will be screened, and it's also an opportunity for people within the film industry to network, to make friends with other film people, and also for people to sell their films and sell their services to films being made. Also involved in that often is some form of prize judgment and awards. The Oscars, on the other hand, are simply an awards ceremony to recognise films that have been made that year, and it's chosen by a jury, a group of people, but it's a rather large committee of people, sort of film critics and people like that, who choose who wins all the awards. And the main difference between Cannes and other film festivals is just simply because it's been running for a long time and it's become very prestigious. There's no reason necessarily why it's more prestigious. It's just over time it's developed a reputation of films that do well at Cannes, generally renowned to be very good.
So essentially, like, the Cannes Festival is just a very small group of judges who get together once a year, and they all watch the same movies at the same time, and then they make a decision on which one was their best. Whereas the Oscars is really like Hollywood's big moment of the year. It's like the Hollywood elite. I think it's like how many judges?
I don't know. It's a very, very big group.
Large number of people.
Journalists and critics. And
they're given a short list of films, and then they vote for which films they think should win the best category, the categories. So, really, like, the Hollywood, the Oscars is a chance for Hollywood to just sort of, like, reward people. It's like the industry's moment to reward people. Whereas Cannes is really the critics' chance to, like, more seriously consider which they think is the best film.
Exactly. And also, another difference is the Oscars is very much focused on Hollywood, an American film. Because it's an American award ceremony. For instance, you have the BAFTAs in the UK and the César Awards in France.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas film festivals, no matter where they are open to everyone from around the world. That's why you often see American films doing well in Cannes. You'll see European films doing very well in festivals in America, such as South by Southwest or any other
Sundance
yeah, exactly. My mind went blank then. Tribeca, yeah. That's another one.
How are you doing, Henry?
I'm very good.
Yeah that's fine. You're 19.
I'm young. I'm sprightly.
Full of energy. Okay, right. So thanks, Kohei. You know, this is ridiculous because the messages keep coming in as we're doing this. So I'm afraid when it hits 7. That's okay. Absolutely our cut-off point.
Shall we have a look and pick our favourites?
I don't know if that's fair. I think that we should just try our best.
Keep that. Shall we try and keep the answers a bit shorter?
Let's keep the answers to about a minute from now on. Okay.
Let's go.
I've got a timer somewhere.
I've got one.
You've got a watch. You got your phone.
You can just look at my watch.
Okay.
All right.
I quite like the idea of something that goes beep.
Oh, here. Well, I can.
I've got my watch.
Right. There we go.
This is going to go beep.
Prepared.
This is going to go beep. Okay.
So
all right.
To do a minute spiel.
Let's see if we can do it for 1 minute. Do you want to take it in turns?
Yeah, let's go for it.
So
if you ask me a question.
Okay, I'll ask you one. Right. So, Jose Luis Sanchez Gonzalez says, "Hi, monster." I wonder why he's calling me a monster. Maybe I'm a monster of English. Here you have my questions. Could you tell us a few titles of movies which could be easy to understand for improving our level of English listening? Which do you think that could be the best way to watch movies for learning English? With original subtitles or with subtitles in our own language? Can I take this one?
If you want, go for it.
Right. Okay, so, Jose, I've mentioned already that it's very difficult to identify movies which are very easy to understand. There's Nacho Libre. But, you know, he speaks with a sort of Mexican accent, and I'm sure you want to hear real British English. So, you know, just listen to Luke's English podcast. Never mind movies. Just listen to this. But should you watch with subtitles or not? Well, I think you should do it in stages. First stage is probably to just watch a film in English with subtitles in your language, right? Stage one. Stage two, watch the film again in English, with subtitles in English, all right? Then stage three, the final stage, maybe, is to watch the film with no subtitles at all, okay? Now, it's very... I think the first stage is so you understand the film and enjoy it. Second stage is so that you can actually see the words as they're coming out, and it's a good way of, like actually identifying words which are being used. You can compare the difference between what you're hearing and what you're seeing. And the third stage is really just good for your listening, because if you just use subtitles all the time, it's not going to prepare you that much for real life, because when you talk to people in the real world, they don't have subtitles.
We don't.
So really depends on your level of English. It's harder to listen without subtitles, but you should probably do it. It's better for your English in the long run. Damn, I did 1.5 minutes.
Oh, Luke. But it was a good answer, and I want to add that even in film school, at my university, we watch films with whatever language it's in, subtitles on the screen.
Really?
And I think that's common practice with critics.
Really?
As well, yes.
So you watch a Spanish film in Spanish with Spanish subtitles?
I speak Spanish, but say, for instance, in English, because most of our classes are taught in English. Even if everyone in the room speaks perfect English, we'll 99% of the time still have English subtitles.
Okay, yeah.
On it.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. That if you're watching a film just to appreciate it, you should listen to it in its original language. You shouldn't listen to a dubbed version.
Oh, never. No. Never, ever watch dubbed versions.
Okay.
That's my comment.
Right.
Okay.
Next question's for you, Henry. And it's from Ken Yorioka. And he says, "Hi, Luke," in this case, Henry.
Yeah.
"Here's a question from a different angle of movies. When do you think popcorn became a symbol food of movie theatres and why? So what's the origin of popcorn as the movie food? And what British food do you think would replace popcorn? Don't say fish and chips."
Okay.
Okay, you got...
I won't say fish and chips.
You've got about 1 minute.
Well, Ken, I would, in all honesty, I don't know exactly when popcorn became the symbol of the theatre and the cinema. I would say it was when it became popular in America in the 40s and 50s. Going to the cinema, going to the movie theatre, was the most popular social activity to do. I know at the beginning they sold more complete meals like hamburgers and hot dogs at the cinemas. That became less and less popular as time went on, so I guess it must be in the 1950s, I would say, that the popcorn became the food to eat at the movie theatre. In terms of an English food that could replace popcorn, I don't know exactly. Probably crisps, Walker's crisps.
You think so?
Or a nice bacon sandwich. I like a bacon sandwich. It's very British, so I would take a bacon sandwich at the cinema.
Bang! That was 59 seconds, 0.51. You nailed it.
Got very good timing.
You're very good. What was I going to say? I was going to say crisps, really? Because crisps don't
make... It's a bit crunchy. But so is popcorn.
Crisps is more noisy than popcorn, surely, because the bag...
It depends. You could put crisps in a box, like a popcorn box.
Okay, Henry, tell me this. If you're in a movie, right, you're watching a very serious film, you're listening very carefully, you're trying to understand every single word, and then the person behind you is doing this.
I would get rather annoyed.
What would you say?
I would say very kindly, can you please put those crisps away?
Oh, sorry. Would you like some?
I mean, I wouldn't say no.
So we're now having a conversation in the cinema.
Exactly. So then we get very awkward.
Yeah.
But the thing is, popcorn could... I'll just take one.
Yeah, it's...
They're nice.
Okay, you know what? We're now eating with our mouths full. So we shouldn't do that. It's very rude.
It's just giving... This is what it would sound like if they started talking while watching the film as well.
Exactly, yeah.
But crisps could be put in a paper box, like popcorn, I suppose.
It's a difficult one. What British food could be perfect in a cinema? Well, it's a kind of difficult question because British food is not, you know, it's not.
It's often messy and takes up a lot of plates and things.
And it has to be something that's not very smelly, not very noisy, something that you can just eat like over and over and over again during a great film. So
maybe biscuits.
Biscuits. There you go. Biscuits and a. And some milk, because you need the milk with the biscuits.
Dip it in, there you go.
Exactly, some biscuits, there you go.
Right, you ready for the next question?
Yeah, I'm ready for the next question. You want to read it?
Yes, this question is from Rom Hain, and it's two questions in one, so you can do 30 seconds on each. Thoughts about the latest Tarantino movie, Django Unchained?
Yeah.
And also, is Christian Bale a good actor, in your opinion?
So do I have to do both of these in a minute?
Because I had two questions in mind.
You did, didn't you?
But you can just your thoughts.
I'll just break the rules.
Let's go.
Okay. Right, so, my thoughts about the latest Tarantino movie in the last 30 seconds. Well, I thought it was really good. I really, really enjoyed it. I think Tarantino's best work is probably Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown. And then Kill Bill, I wasn't that impressed by that. Just my own opinion. And then after Kill Bill, he did Death Proof, didn't he? Which was, I think it was rubbish. I didn't like it. And then he came back with Inglourious Bastards, which was much better in my opinion. Not perfect by any means. And then Django Unchained, no, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really exciting and very funny. Great script, great performances. Very violent. Of course, which some people say is a negative point, a bit too violent in some people's opinions. But no, I loved every minute of it. I thought the last scene was a little bit unnecessary. There's a moment where Quentin Tarantino turns up himself doing a very bad Australian accent.
He always does that in his films.
I just thought, why did he do that? But that's kind of part of the fun, really.
That's part of his style.
So I liked it very much. Now, is Christian Bale, is he a good actor? Yeah, I do. I think he's a very good actor. Yeah. I really think so. He's a method actor, isn't he? So he really throws himself into the role completely.
He moved to Gotham City for a year.
Exactly. He developed a genuine fear of bats in order to perform Batman effectively.
He killed his own
father. Did Batman kill his own
father? No, he doesn't. He doesn't have a...
Exactly. He's a great actor. I think he's really good. I think I was very impressed by his voice in Batman. Mm-hmm. You know, the kind of "I'm Batman" kind of thing. I don't know how he managed to do that. Maybe he smokes lots of cigarettes every day.
Probably.
No, I think he's a great actor, and he was very good in Batman. Also, a very nice person. Although he did have a bit of a meltdown.
He did have a meltdown. I remember that.
That's another story for another time. Right, that was 2 minutes. I can't do this very well. I'm far too verbose. I ramble.
I think you are. You're a very verbose gentleman.
I can't stop talking sometimes. Right, next question is from Karim. And Karim says, do you agree that Citizen Kane is the best film made in the 20th century? Henry, go.
Okay, this is a very, very complex question. Me, personally, I would say no. Just because I've seen it, obviously, and I love it. It's a great film. It's technically, considering the context of it, the time it was made, yes, it's the best film made. But to me, it's not the most entertaining film made in the 20th century. I think Taxi Driver, I prefer. I prefer a lot of films from the 90s, like Pulp Fiction, Tarantino's early work. Is great, but in terms of technically the camera angles used, the shots used, probably could be argued as the best film of the 20th century. But again, it's a completely subjective question with a very subjective answer. There you go.
Boom! 50 seconds. Much more concise than me. Hey, Henry, you talking to me?
You're talking to me. You know, that was improvised.
Really, yeah.
Completely. After... He saw Bruce Springsteen talking to himself on stage in a concert.
Yeah.
And he was instructed by Martin Scorsese to just talk to himself in the mirror. And that's what came out, one of the most famous movie lines in the 20th century.
We're talking, of course, about a scene from the movie Taxi Driver, in which Robert De Niro looks at himself in the mirror and says, "You talking to me?"
With the face as well. Exactly.
I saw Taxi Driver in the Grand Palais last Friday.
Yeah. How is it, the setup there?
It's just great. It was a bit light at the beginning. So because the sun, before the sun went down, you couldn't see the screen very well.
I was thinking of going to that. It's on for the rest of the week, I think.
Possibly my favourite film of all time, Taxi Driver.
It's one of my favourites.
It's another story for another time as well. Right, so Aptem. Yeah.
Aptem, well, that's Russian letters.
I think it's Russian, it's Cyrillic.
I don't know if it's still pronounced Aptem, whatever.
That's true.
Aptem. he wants to ask, are people in the UK or the US familiar with Russian movies? Did you watch any of these? By the way, if you find my name difficult to pronounce, it's Artie.
Okay.
Probably should have read that first.
I should have done. See, we're getting to the point where these are messages. These are ones which have arrived before. They've arrived after we started recording. They're real time.
Yeah. Let's hear your answer.
So, are the people in the UK familiar with Russian movies? We're not really, as far as I'm aware. I really don't think we are.
Maybe a few. But
I think recently there was a couple of sort of. Films called Day Watch and Night Watch,
yes.
And they were Russian films about vampires. I didn't see them myself, but apparently they were really good. There's an amazing action scene involving a car driving vertically up a building, I think.
Oh.
Anyway, I haven't seen them, but other than those films, Day Watch and Night Watch, no, I don't think we are familiar with Russian films. In fact, I met a Russian guy at a stand-up gig recently, and I was doing my bad Robert De Niro impression, and I asked him, can you tell me of some Russian movie stars? And he didn't understand what I was saying to him. But I don't know any Russian movie stars, and I don't really know any big Russian movies. I know the Battleship Potemkin.
Yes.
Is that a Russian film?
I don't know.
It could easily not be.
It could not be. That's the thing.
I don't want to say that the Battleship Potemkin is a Russian film, because I could easily be wrong. So I'm afraid, Artie, no, I don't really know many Russian films, and I don't think people in the UK do either. So, sorry, we don't.
You should tell us some to watch. I'll watch them.
Yeah. Give us a recommendation. Boom. 1 minute 21.
Not bad. Getting better.
Okay. Next one. Mariana Ramirez says, what do you think about stereotypes of French movies? I really love French movies, but I must admit, I couldn't understand the plot of some movies. Why do directors and plots get so hard to understand? See this parody with the clichés of French movies, and she's included a video clip from YouTube. So, all right, French stereotypes in movies, and do you understand French movies? Let's go.
As for French stereotypes, they are actually often bought upon the French-speaking, the francophone people by themselves in their comedies. French comedies play very heavily on stereotype, especially of themselves. In more serious films, I don't really think it is much of an issue. Thankfully, I speak French, so I do understand French films. But I know it is harder to follow for non-French speakers, one, because of the language, but and two, because European cinema is often a lot more complex and abstract than American cinema. But like you, I do love French films. If you want to watch some of my favourites are Entre les Murs, which is Between the Walls. It's a film about multiculturalism in modern France. La Haine, the Hatred is Good. And another film which I've completely forgotten the name of, it's something like Merriam by the Sea or something like that, but we'll save that for another day.
Bingo. 1 minute, 1 hour. 1 hour. It feels like, it felt like an hour, Henry, to be honest with you. 1 minute, 4 seconds. Right, it's almost 7 o'clock, but I think we can keep going.
Let's keep going.
Right, next question.
Right, this is from Agnieszka.
Agnieszka. Okay.
Can you think of any movies that, in your opinion, deserve much more recognition than they get? For example, you've heard about it somewhere, watched it, and it was excellent, but then it turns out to be obscure beyond belief.
Oh, my God.
Putting you on the spot here, I've got one if you want me to field the question, but if not...
I'm going to have a go.
Go for it.
Boom. Bingo. All right. Why am I saying boom and bingo?
Boom.
It's so stupid. Right. So, a film which should get a lot more recognition. So, in my opinion, an underrated film, in my opinion. I would say Ace Ventura Pet Detective 2, When Nature Calls. I think it's a masterclass in physical comedy acting. I think the slapstick in that film is hard to beat, in fact. I think Jim Carrey's physical comedy, as demonstrated in his performance of Ace Ventura, is really unprecedented. I mean, we've seen the work of people like Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton, but they never reached the same level of dynamic physical movement that you can see in Jim Carrey. I mean, take The Mask as an example. That's one of his films. The Mask. Well, there was lots of CGI in that film, computer-generated imagery, but really most of the physical work was done by Jim Carrey and his rubber face. So I would say that people consider Ace Ventura Pet Detective 2, When Nature Calls, to be just a piece of trash. But if you look a little bit more closely at it, you can see that it's a work of physical comedic genius.
Yeah, very good answer.
Thank you. 1 minute, 17 seconds. Still too long.
Still a bit. Should we do one more?
Okay. Let's do one more.
Let's just have a look.
Let's see. Wait a minute. Thu Hien has already asked a question. What films should young...
We've already gone through that, Henry?
Yeah, we should stop and do one more, and we're going to do the next one. And okay. It's Artis, and Artis says, "Hi Luke, from Pamplona, living now in London. Welcome to London. Do you like the trilogy of Back to the Future? What do you think about it? Could you do a complete episode talking about that? Thank you." I'd love to do a complete episode about Back to the Future. Give us your 1 minute opinion on that, Henry, please.
Back to the Future trilogy is one of the best comedy/sci-fi/adventure trilogies ever made. Michael J. Fox, one of the best actors around, and he did very well in it. What do I want to say about it? What do I think about it? I think the first one's the best, and I think they gradually get worse and worse, but that's often the fact with many trilogies. It's very good fun. Very well made, very catchy, very entertaining. Like it.
Well, I would add to that by saying, I think, Artis, that's a brilliant idea. I'd love to do an episode all about Back to the Future because it's just one of my favourite films of all time. In fact, I've been planning on doing an episode all about time. And I think that might be quite an appropriate movie to discuss in that one. There are so many podcasts to do, Henry, so many subjects to cover, and just so little time. I think that we're going to now draw things to a close,
yes,
because you have to go.
I do.
It's been great having you on the show, and I hope to have you back at some point in the future.
I'm sure I will be.
So, ladies and gentlemen, please do add your comments and stuff to this episode of the podcast. But for now... It's almost goodbye. Now, at the end of episodes, I always go, bye, 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 as if it's a sort of echo.
A cool
kind of thing.
Yeah.
So do you want to join me in a bye, bye, bye,
yeah,
bye?
Should we
bye,
alternate?
Bye. Yeah, okay. I often get closer to the microphone, but we could alternate by getting further and further away.
Yeah,
right? Just don't bang your head on the...
Watch out.
Okay, are you ready?
Yeah, so who's going to start? You start.
I'll start. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks again for listening to this episode of Luke's English Podcast featuring the one and only Henry Dean. But for now, it's bye.
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 Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, you can visit teacherluke.wordpress.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.